Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director and training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop. This program, however, is being done in collaboration with the Leukemia Research Foundation, and I am delighted to be partnering with them today on today's program. And you'll be hearing more about this foundation as the program proceeds. And they offer wonderful services and programs. Today's program focuses on adults living with acute lymphocytic leukemia, or ALL, treatment updates. And today's program is supported by Gilead and sponsored by Takeda Oncology. And I really want to thank them for their support. Now, before I introduce our speakers, I just want to acknowledge that we have quite a few of you on the call today. There's over 100 participants on the call today. You come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, Nepal, and United Kingdom. So it's truly a global call. And we're delighted to have all of you on the call today and that you've chosen to spend this time with us, this next hour with us, learning more about adults living with acute lymphocytic leukemia. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Marlise Luskin. And Dr. Luskin is Senior Physician, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Luskin will be addressing an overview of acute lymphocytic lymphoblastic leukemia in adults, current standard of care, treatment updates, therapy for relapsed refractory ALL, and quality of life concerns. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Luskin.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you really for that lovely introduction. This is always such a nice sort of event to be able to speak directly to patients beyond our immediate clinic and our immediate geographic region, because we really are a community of providers and patients and advocates trying to make care and outcomes better for adults with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL. So in just a few minutes, I'm going to try and cover a number of topics and then collaborate after that by passing the baton to my colleague, Dr. Curran, who'll come after me. So to begin, acute lymphoblastic leukemia in adults, I think that, you know, the title of this conference, teleconference, is ALL in adults. And I think to start off, for those who may not be so familiar with this disease, may be surprised that we even have this conference, because ALL is famously often referred to or known as the kind of cancer that children are diagnosed with. And it's true that approximately half of cases of ALL occur in children, but half of cases occur in adults, and it occurs in adults of all ages, from young adults, so-called adolescents and young adults, and adults in midlife, and adults who are more senior in their years. And so there's a wide range of ages, and this also affects adults of all backgrounds. And so we have a really diverse group of individuals who are living with this condition. And as I'll sort of talk about as we move through my portion, we really try to tailor treatment to the individual. What is their personal situation to make sure they have the best outcome? In terms of types of ALL, ALL is a broad term for this for a group of conditions. Not every patient with ALL is the same, and not every ALL is the same. We refer to ALL really in two major categories. One is called the Philadelphia chromosome positive ALL, and this is a group of a type of ALL where there's one particular abnormality, a rearrangement of chromosome 9 and chromosome 22, and that rearrangement changes the shape of the chromosomes, and there's actually a small chromosome caused by that rearrangement. And that small chromosome was noted in Philadelphia, and so we've termed it the Philadelphia chromosome. So about half of patients with adults with ALL have this so-called Philadelphia chromosome positive ALL, and the other half have Philadelphia chromosome negative ALL. The negative group is all those patients have abnormalities, different abnormalities that have different features, but we often treat them fairly similarly. So from the treatment perspective, we really want to know whether that Philadelphia chromosome is present or Philadelphia chromosome is absent. The Philadelphia chromosome can occur in adults of all ages. It is more common in older adults. And so, you know, for a younger adult, the chance that the Philadelphia chromosome is present is maybe about 20%. And that number increases to 50, 60% in adults of an older age group. But it can occur at any age, so it's really important that we look for it at the time of diagnosis. So when we meet an adult with ALL, we learn about them. We obviously know their age. We learn about their health conditions. We learn about their activity level. We learn about their lives. And then we learn about their leukemia. Which subtype do they have? Do they have the Philadelphia chromosome negative? And then from there, we move on to thinking about their care. And so when we think about treatment, we include the age, the patient characteristics, the disease characteristics, and then we start talking about standard treatments as well as whether or not there are any clinical trials available. We'll talk about clinical trials in a little bit, but I usually say in order to think about clinical trials and where the field is going, you have to kind of know the standard. So how does one think about standard of treatment, standard treatment for leukemia patients? Well, it has to do with those features that I just mentioned. Who is the patient and what subtype do they have? When we think about Philadelphia chromosome positive ALL, one thing is constant for all patients. All patients need to be treated with something called a tyrosine kinase inhibitor, or TKI. That's a funky acronym and a mouthful of words, but these are pills that address the particular abnormality that I just mentioned. When chromosomes 9 and 22 get rearranged, they put a gene called BCR next to a gene called ABL. And that ABL, which is a kinase or biological switch, it is overactive. It drives leukemia. And these pills shut down that kinase, shut down that switch, and are very effective at controlling Philadelphia chromosome positive ALL. So the doctor will talk with the patient and select one of a couple available tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and we'll say that this is going to be a backbone of your treatment, and we're going to pair this with some other sort of adjunctive treatments to try and get you the best possible outcome. Generally, the first stage is to get into what's called remission, basically decreasing the amount of leukemia so that we can't see it by combining a TKI with steroids and possibly additional chemotherapy. Subsequently, after remission is achieved, the goal is to try and keep the disease in remission for as long as possible, ideally indefinitely. And that can be achieved by adding in chemotherapy or adding in something called an allogeneic stem cell transplant or bone marrow transplant, which may be appropriate for some patients. There's a lot of different ways to approach ALL, but those are our tools, TKI, chemotherapy, transplant. And as I'll talk about in a minute with some updates, we now have some new developments in pH-positive ALL that are really changing the treatment landscape for the better. So what about if you have Philadelphia negative ALL? Well, we don't have one of those pills or tyrosine kinase inhibitors that addresses this condition. And so for this cohort of patients, we think about using more, if you will, conventional chemotherapies in different combinations in order to achieve the same goals. To get into remission, we combine different chemotherapies, usually involves some steroids, and then we tailor the intensity of treatment to the age and health of the patient. And then once remission is achieved, we continue chemotherapy and consider an allogeneic transplant will offer the best chance of keeping that leukemia in remission indefinitely. So we use different tools in our toolkit, but for patients, all patients with ALL, we are trying to get into remission and then keep that patient in remission using the tools in our toolkit, tyrosine kinase inhibitors if it's pH positive, chemotherapy, and transplantation for some patients. So that sounds good, and we really do are in a good have really good standard treatments for adults with ALL, and it's really important that the patient, family, and provider really talk about those options and tailor to the patient's situation. But it's also a really exciting time for this disease because we have had a lot of new developments in the last few years, a few of which I'm going to refer to now, and then those developments are continuing, and you'll hear a little bit about those clinical trial updates in a few minutes. So back to our two categories, what's new? Treatment updates for pH-positive ALL. So in this category of disease, we have a couple different things. One is the selection of the tyrosine kinase inhibitors. What's been most common in the United States in the last several years is the use of a tyrosine kinase inhibitor called dasatinib or Sprycel. This is a really effective drug, but we're learning more about an even more potent drug called ponatinib, which has some toxicities, but we've learned more how to use it in the last few years, and that's becoming an option for some patients. And this drug may allow us to get deeper remissions and prevent a particular type of a particular way that that sometimes the leukemia can develop resistance to our standard therapy. It blocks a particular resistance pathway. So that's one thing that's new. The other thing that's new is that we are starting to use a new agent called blinatumomab, or Blincyto. This is an immunotherapy where a patient gets this drug, which is an antibody that targets both the ALL and the patient's own T cells, to try and get their immune system to help us eradicate residual disease after the first phases of treatment. And we've had a lot of new updates on the efficacy of blinatumomab in the consolidation phase for pH-positive ALL, and we're starting to use this more routinely in first-line therapy. And then finally, with the addition of these newer and better TKIs or pills that turn off the ABL switch, with the introduction of blinatumomab, and also a better ability to monitor our responses, we have better lab tests now to look for what we call very low levels of measurable residual disease or minimal residual disease. We're starting to have a better understanding about who will most benefit from something called bone marrow transplant, allogeneic transplant, really tailoring this application of this modality to the right patient. In Philadelphia chromosome negative ALL, we also have improvements. We are really starting to learn how to incorporate novel therapies, new immunotherapies into the treatment of pH-positive ALL as well. And we have some new data that's been presented recently about that same drug, blinatumomab, being efficacious in consolidation for pH-negative ALL. You can see a theme here that blinatumomab is really improving the treatment of ALL in remission, keeping more people in remission and preventing relapses. And there are ongoing trials looking at the addition of other novel agents in first-line therapy, including a drug called inotuzumab, which is an antibody-drug conjugate, a drug called venetoclax, which is a pill that helps chemotherapies be more effective. And then we're learning how best to combine our conventional or traditional approaches and these new approaches to get the best possible outcomes. So a lot that's new. We are trying to improve our first-line therapy so that we get it right the first time. That's always our goal. But certainly there are situations where a patient gets treated for ALL and that ALL does return. And we're seeing improvements in this phase as well. We have the ability to use some of our recently improved drugs for relapsed ALL, including blinatumomab and inotuzumab. Those drugs, as I mentioned, are being explored in the first-line setting, but they are approved in the relapse setting and can be very effective. And development of something called CAR T-cell or cellular therapy is really been a dramatic improvement and change in available therapy in the last few years. We now have cellular therapy approved for adults of all ages, and so this is an option for many adults who have relapsed ALL. Dr. Curran will talk a little bit about clinical trial updates, and we're obviously trying to improve and expand the available options for patients with ALL that has come back after prior therapy. all these drugs have different side effects profiles. In these few minutes, I don't have time to go into all the different side effects, but I'll just summarize by saying that particularly these new novel agents that are often have different mechanisms than conventional traditional chemotherapy, in general, they have improved tolerability compared to conventional agents. And so our goal is always to try and improve efficacy, get patients into better and more durable remissions, while at the same time improving their quality of life, both the short and the long term. Sometimes there's a trade-off between those things, but we like to, as we develop new drugs and approaches, we're keeping an eye on both things. Can we improve efficacy while decreasing toxicity, helping improve quality of life in the short term, and especially the long term? So it's an exciting time to be working in ALL and to be an ALL clinician. It's something that I really enjoy, and it was really a privilege to speak to you all today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Luskin. That was a superb presentation, stellar, and actually you really set the stage for today's program, so I thank you for that, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Emily Curran, and Dr. Curran is Assistant Professor, Division of Hematology Oncology, Medical Director, UCC Clinical Trials Office, University of Cincinnati, Cancer Center, Vance Center for Molecular Studies. And Dr. Curran will be addressing new treatment approaches and targeted therapy, clinical trial updates, how research contributes to your treatment options, managing complications and side effects of ALL and its treatments, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up appointments, and discussion of open notes. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Curran.
Thank you so much for that kind introduction, and thank you to Dr. Luskin for really, again, kind of setting the stage for my portion of the talk. So when I think about ALL, I think that this is really quite an exciting time for us, simply because of all of the new treatments and all of the progress that we have made. So over the past decade or so, or even less, we have really discovered quite a few new treatments for ALL, many of which Dr. Luskin had described. And I think this has really kind of changed how we approach ALL and how we treat it. So just again, to kind of highlight some of what Dr. Luskin talked about, I think what we've really, much of the progress that we've made in ALL has been in what I would call immunotherapy. So where we are using the patient's own immune system to try to fight the leukemia. And we have several new immunotherapies that are already approved for ALL that Dr. Luskin mentioned. So one of those is blinatumomab, which is, again, it's an antibody that directs the patient's own T cells to attack the leukemia cells. And this is approved both when the leukemia has come back and also to try to get rid of if there's any residual leukemia, even in tiny amounts, to try to prevent the leukemia from coming back. Another really exciting immunotherapy is the drug inotuzumab azogamycin, which is an antibody that's attached to an inactive chemo. And what happens is when it binds to the leukemia cell kind of eats the antibody, and the chemo gets activated within the leukemia cell and kills it from inside the leukemia cell. And then finally, the other two drugs that were recently approved for ALL are what are called chimeric antigen receptor T cells, or CAR Ts. There's one that is approved for young adults with ALL, and then also one that was recently approved for adults. And this is, again, where we take the patient's own healthy T cells, their own immune system, engineer it to attack the leukemia, and then reinfuse it into the patient so that it attacks and gets rid of the leukemia. So these are all, I think, really exciting new treatments that have just really come about in the past 10 years or so. And so I'm personally very excited about where we've come, and also excited about some of the ongoing trials that I think are going to continue to really, really change how we approach adult patients with ALL. And so I think, again, these fall into sort of some big categories in my mind, both thinking about how the treatment approaches have changed and also the ongoing clinical trials. And so a lot of the work that has been done in the past several years has been to look at how we can use those immunotherapies, so the blinatumomab, the CAR-T, the inotuzumab, and move them, as Dr. Luskin mentioned, into the upfront setting. So, you know, using them instead of when the leukemia has come back, but using it right away when a patient is first diagnosed. And the idea with that is twofold. One is that, particularly in our younger patients, if we add that to our standard chemo, perhaps we can get even better responses and prevent it from coming back. And then we know in older patients, and I'm going to get kind of into some of the toxicities in that in a bit, but we know that these chemo regimens are very tough. And oftentimes we can cause more harm than good with some of our really intensive chemos for patients who are diagnosed with ALL, particularly adult patients. And so many of the studies that are ongoing are looking at maybe we don't even need chemotherapy, or maybe we need very little chemotherapy. And maybe that might be an effective approach for adults with ALL. So there are several ongoing trials that are looking at this. So these are patients who are newly diagnosed. So they've got a new diagnosis of ALL. And this is the Philadelphia chromosome negative ALL that Dr. Luskin mentioned. And there's trials looking at, instead of giving the full chemotherapy, can we give less chemotherapy and give some of this immunotherapy, such as this inotuzumab or the blinatumomab, and still get as good of outcomes or perhaps even better? Dr. Luskin has an ongoing trial that she is running where they're looking at whether or not that approach where you're decreasing the chemotherapy, the kind of the standard chemotherapy, and instead substituting some immunotherapy, if that's as good or maybe even better than giving the intensive chemo. And I think that some of the early data from other trials looking at this approach are really encouraging. And so I'm hopeful that in our adult patients with ALL, we're going to be able to use some of these approaches to really minimize the toxicity from treatment. The other ways that we are using immunotherapy, again, to Dr. Luskin's points from earlier, are looking in the Philadelphia chromosome positive ALL. So again, there's been some really encouraging data that in Philadelphia chromosome positive, using those tyrosine kinase inhibitors and immunotherapy, such as blinatumomab, that this may be as good as using that intensive, oftentimes toxic chemotherapy. And so there's ongoing trials looking at that to compare, you know, maybe is this approach with using minimal chemo or just really substituting immunotherapy as good or maybe even better than using chemotherapy. And so those are ongoing, but I think that this is really going to potentially change how we treat adult patients with ALL. And again, the focus is really on using some of these new treatments to try to minimize the need for the toxic chemotherapy. Now, when we talk about these immunotherapies, I think it's really important to note that these are only for the subtype of ALL called B, as in boy, B-cell ALL, because these drugs target markers that are on the surface of B cells, but are not on the surface of T-cell ALL. So all of these new drugs, the blinatumomab, targeted against CD19 on B cells, inotuzumab, which is against CD22 on the B cells, and then the CAR-T, the two different chimeric antigen receptor T cells, those are both, again, directed towards the B cell ALL. And so I think another area of interest and another area where there's a lot of ongoing trials is looking at can we start to develop immunotherapy for T cell ALL? And that's ongoing again in some of the clinical trials where they're using antibodies directed against these markers on the surface of T cells now instead of the B cells, and trying to add those in to try to get rid of any residual leukemia. There's trials looking at that. It's using a drug called daratumumab, which is already approved for other blood cancers, but we're looking at that in T-cell ALL, as well as there's several ongoing trials that I think are really quite exciting, looking at developing chimeric antigen receptor T-cells, so again, those CAR-Ts, but instead of for directing them against the B-cell ALL, there's CAR-Ts now that are in studies and in clinical trials that are being studied for T-cell ALL. These are still very early on in study, but they, you know, I think a lot of, again, a lot of this early data is very encouraging, and I'm really excited to see what comes about from this. And then there's also some other ongoing trials looking at how we can use these immunotherapies and maybe try to even make them better. And so I think that's one big category of the trials are the immunotherapy trials, again, focused on trying to minimize the toxicity of chemotherapy, trying to enhance the efficacy of our treatments. And then, again, another area of the immunotherapy is trying to identify how we can apply what we've learned from B-cell ALL and use that in T-cell ALL. And so I think that's one really exciting area where there's a lot of ongoing clinical trials. The other area where there's a lot of ongoing trials is in targeted therapy. So less of using the body's own immune system, but now looking at what are the features of the leukemia itself that we can perhaps target so that it's really kind of directed towards the leukemia as opposed to all of the cells in the body. And I think there's been some, again, really exciting clinical trials that are ongoing for looking at targeted therapy. One of these is for a specific subtype of ALL called MLL rearranged or KMT2A rearranged ALL. And this is where one of the chromosomes from gets attached to another chromosome. It's a specific change. And when that happens, it seems that these leukemias tend to be sensitive to what's called menin, which directly targets that kind of that fusion protein. So when those two chromosomes get pushed together, they cause this additional expression of these menin genes, and that'll go in and block that. So it's only for those particular types of ALL, but the data, again, look very encouraging where if you can go in and block that, you can get rid of the leukemia. The other exciting, I think, area is looking at what are called blocking the don't die signals. So Dr. Luskin mentioned very briefly about venetoclax. So that's one of the best known ones. It's used for another type of leukemia called AML. But what that does is that we know that these leukemias all have signals that tell them not to die. And these drugs, like venetoclax, go in and block those don't die signals. These seem to be effective in ALL, and maybe blocking more than one don't die signal can be even more effective. And so there's also trials ongoing looking at maybe trying to block that don't die signal or several don't die signals, either in newly diagnosed or also when the leukemia has come back. And so that's, again, ongoing trials as well as some of the upcoming trials. I think Dr. Luskin talked a little bit about pH-positive ALL, and there's work to try to find even more effective tyrosine kinase inhibitors that may be even better than the ones that we have, or perhaps work when the other ones stopped working. And so I think, you know, again, I want to emphasize we have really come quite a long way. Just in the past 10 years, with approval of a whole bunch of new drugs that we can use that for leukemias. And again, it's really kind of changed how we've treated these diseases. And I think, you know, a big part of that is these ongoing trials. All of these started as what are called a clinical trial, where patients, such as the folks listening to this, this presentation kind of put the trust in their physicians and in the group to try to find newer and better treatments. And that's really how we make progress. That's how we've made the progress that we've made, and that's how we're going to continue to make progress. And so, again, I think these are areas that I'm really excited about and be happy to kind of talk in any more detail about any of these, because I really do think this is how we make things better for our patients. And then just very briefly, I think, again, a lot of what I talked about is we know that there's a lot of toxicity from the chemotherapy that we currently use. And so much of the work really has been trying to not only just manage toxicities after they've happened, but try to prevent them. And a lot of that has been by trying to use lower doses of chemotherapy, particularly in older adults, but then adding something else that's maybe a little bit different, like the immunotherapy or a targeted therapy, so that we can try to minimize some of the complications and side effects. I think a lot of our supportive measures have gotten a lot better, and I always tell my patients, you know, we have all different tools now to manage side effects and complications, so there's no need to suffer. Please just let us know right away, and we can, you know, we can try to tweak things and change things, because just like our chemotherapy has changed quite a bit, we've also gotten a lot better at figuring out how to, again, number one, prevent toxicities, but when they do happen, try to manage them. And then finally, in this, I think, now this has been even newer, at least for me, in the past, less than 5 years, I guess since probably 2020, we've really shifted towards using telehealth and telemedicine, which I think can be, you know, we've all gotten a lot more used to it, I think, over the past 2 years, but it still can be a challenge. And so, but it is a very, I think, helpful tool in kind of helping us as providers to educate patients, and also, you know, to help patients also get in touch with us more frequently, not have to travel, and to really try to, you know, minimize the burden that can oftentimes be on our patients to have to travel quite a long ways. I think as you are approaching telehealth and telemedicine patient appointments, you know, I think one of the challenges is it can sometimes feel a bit informal. And so making sure that, you know, you feel comfortable, you should always feel comfortable to ask us whatever questions you have, even though it does sometimes feel a little bit more formal. Also just, you know, being very upfront and checking to make sure that you're able to use the technology, because sometimes I can't get it to work, to be honest. And so there's always ways we can work around things, because we want to make this work and make it helpful for all of us. And then also another thing that's kind of come about in the past several years is that, at least I know at my institution, everything is in the electronic medical record and is immediately available, which I think is a wonderful thing to make sure that the patients know everything that is in their chart and really feel like they have, they're able to access everything that's going on with their medical care. But I always tell my patients, if there is something in the chart that you don't understand, please, please, please just call me rather than Googling and going down the Google, you know, rabbit holes of seeing information that is probably may or may not be correct and may send you into a bit of a panic. So I always say if there's anything that I think could be confusing in the chart, I always try to reach out to my patients ahead of time, but sometimes I can't. And so always please, please, please reach out to your physician if you see anything that's of concern rather than letting yourself worry about it until the next appointment. And so with that, we'll conclude my portion, and I look forward to the discussion.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Karin. That was a stellar and an outstanding presentation. A lot of wonderful information for our participants, a lot of inspiring information for our participants, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. So much progress in the treatment of acute ALL. So thank you. And our next speaker is Mr. Kevin Radelet. And Mr. Radelet is Executive Director, Leukemia Research Foundation. And he will be discussing Leukemia Research Foundation's free programs and services. He'll provide you with their telephone number, website, and how to get in touch with them in other ways as well. It's really my great pleasure, and I'm delighted to be working with and partnering with the Leukemia Research Foundation and with Mr. Radelet on this program. So I now present to you my esteemed colleague, Mr. Radelet.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. I am very proud to participate today, and thank you to Cancer Care and particularly to Dr. Luskin and Dr. Curran for their most helpful updates and counsel. As I said, we really appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about the Leukemia Research Foundation. As the middle name suggests, the Leukemia Research Foundation funds cancer research into the causes and potential cures for leukemia on a worldwide basis. To date, we have funded more than 600 projects around the world. But in addition to our research, and probably of particular interest to this audience today, is the tremendous patient education and support programs that we offer. I encourage everybody on the line today to visit our website. It's leukemiarf.org. That's leukemiarf.org. There you will find a lot of information on, using our patient and family support drop-down that's on the home page. We follow a patient-centered approach. Access to leukemia patients and nationwide partnerships. Our goal is to provide patients and families with a single and trusted source of information, education programs, and support services to connect them with other credible organizations and resources. And you'll also find a library of webinars covering all acute and even chronic leukemias, along with videos on nutrition, side effects, transplants, therapies, clinical trials, and more. And speaking of clinical trials, which has been touched on quite a bit today, our website also features a clinical trials hub that's all specific to leukemia. You'll, again, find that at our website, and you can learn about clinical trials, and the information is also going to help you decide whether participating is right for you. There's information on how do clinical trials work, clinical trial myths, is there a clinical trial that's right for me, diversity in clinical trials, how to find a clinical trial, and there's even an online clinical trial search tool. And this is all very specific to leukemia. So I encourage, as I said, everyone to visit our website for all this information, the educational programs, the resources, and, of course, the clinical trials hub. And that website, again, is leukemiarf.org. That's leukemiarf.org. And you can also call us at any time, which is area code 847-424-0600. That's 847-424-0600. So thank you again, Dr. Messner, and the other doctors for including us in this presentation today.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Radelet, and what a wonderful resource for all of our participants. Some of you may be familiar with Leukemia Research Foundation. For those of you who are not, you may have not been aware of all the different resources that Mr. Radelet outlined. Please take advantage of them. And I just want to let everyone know that at the end of this program, next week actually, you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation, which is an evaluation of the program, but also notice that there'll be a lot of resources mentioned. So any resource we gave out, for example, the information about the Leukemia Research Foundation, their website, their telephone number, how to get in touch with them, all of that information will be provided in addition to other resources for you as well. So if you are trying to write this information down, please know that we'll be sending it to you as well in the SurveyMonkey evaluation. And I'm just going to say a few words about Cancer Care Services. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization. It's primarily staffed by oncology social workers, and we have a hope line, 800-813-4673, and people contact that line with questions and concerns they may have. And so some common questions and concerns include just getting financial help, or issues around food insecurity, or issues about wanting to get some support or joining a support group or an online group. And so I want to just outline for you all the different services we do offer. So we do offer, of course, the Hope Line, which is an immediate connection to a social worker at Cancer Care. And when you call that number, the social workers are assigned to different time periods, and so you do not have a wait time. You'll be able to speak to someone right away. We also, of course, offer practical financial and co-payment assistance. And we also help with food insecurity issues. We also help with online support groups. We have lots of online support groups on many different types of cancers, including ALL. We have programs for adults, for young adults, for parents, for caregivers, for partners. So if you visit our website, www.cancercare.org, you'll be able to see all the different services that we offer. In addition, we do have a number of these workshops. We offer about 80 a year. We also have a number of publications on our website that you'll be able to download. And we also offer coping circles and resource navigation. And the resource navigation is, for example, if we don't have a resource that you're looking for, our staff will work with you to find a resource, whether it be in your city, your region, your state, anywhere in the United States. They will find a resource for you, and they'll stay with you until you have the resource that you need. So with that being said, that kind of concludes the information about Cancer Care. And again, you'll be getting all that information on the SurveyMonkey as well, just the links to connect to different resources. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Rob to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. I want to try to as many of your questions as possible. Rob?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So the question for Dr. Luskin, any update on new treatments for T-cell ALL?
That's a great question. I think Dr. Kerr mentioned that this is an area where there's still an unmet need, and we're really encouraged and encouraging people to participate in clinical trials. In terms of what's being explored, I think Dr. Curran mentioned a drug called venetoclax, or a BCL2 inhibitor, which helps chemotherapy be more effective. And there are ongoing trials including venetoclax into chemotherapy backbones. I'm personally involved in conducting a trial of adding it to a reduced dose intensity chemotherapy for older adults with ALL, and that's something we've seen really encouraging responses thus far. And I'll ask you to stay tuned for our results once the data is mature. And then there is a trial being designed through our cooperative groups, really, so it will be open hopefully at many centers across the country to allow lots of younger adults to participate, adding that drug into a backbone of chemotherapy that's applicable to patients under the ages of 40 or 50. And that trial will actually look at adding both venetoclax and navitoclax, which are work in similar but complementary ways to try and improve the sensitivity of chemotherapy. So, I think other things in T-cell ALL, cellular therapy or CAR T-cell therapy is much more developed for B-cell malignancies in both ALL and also other types of lymphoma. But there's also ongoing work to develop cellular therapy for T-cell ALL, and trials are underway to try and solve that problem. There's some technical issues that make it a harder modality for this subtype, but we're determined to bring that modality to our T-cell patients as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Curran. What are your thoughts on standard root causes of ALL? Have you seen a correlation between the COVID mRNA vaccine and ALL?
So as far as what causes ALL, I think we still don't have great data to say what causes it. There is some data that, you know, emerging data that perhaps some people are more predisposed to ALL because of family history or their own genetics. But I think in general, for the most part, I unfortunately tell my patients it's oftentimes just, you know, bad luck and something, you know, the genes just, there were abnormalities in the genes that just happened and led to this. There are several groups that are trying to understand better why some people get ALL and what predisposes you, but we don't have great data. And we don't have any evidence, there's no data at all that the COVID vaccine has in any way predisposes patients to ALL or leads to ALL.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. For Dr. Luskin, what advice do you have on diet and supplements post-BMT?
So that's a great question. I would say, of course, the most important thing is for the individual to be in conference with their transplant team about where they are in their treatment in terms of time from transplant and their level of immune suppression, because the transplant team may have specific recommendations regarding food safety and restrictions to keep the patient safe after the bone marrow transplant procedure. So in general, I'll emphasize that to really get individualized recommendations from your local team. But, you know, to answer that question more generally, you know, in terms of diet for patients with ALL as they go through treatment, we don't really have any data to suggest that any particular diet can prevent or treat ALL. But in general, as patients go through treatment and may not be feeling at their best, really encouraging to try and keep a balanced diet, encouraging to try and, you know, get a variety of proteins and fruits and vegetables, and really just mean good nutrition and not try to do something that's really extreme or different than what a person is used to or comfortable. Because we, in general, just good nutrition and eating regularly is going to provide the strength needed to get through treatments.
Excellent. Thank you. For Dr. Karen, how common is it for ALL to metastasize? I'm concerned about my ALL reaching my brain or CNS, but my doctor has told me not to worry about it since treatment has been going well.
That's a great question. So what I usually tell my patients is that unlike other cancers, like breast cancer, prostate cancer, we know that leukemias are already all over your whole, your entire body because by definition, the blood is throughout your body. And so we don't typically think of ALL as metastasizing or like some of our other types of cancers do. Now, that being said, the area around the brain is an area where typically the leukemia cells, you know, they should be kept out of that area, but they do like to go to that area. And many of our treatments don't reach the area around the brain. They don't reach the central nervous system. And so it's really important during treatment to get ongoing treatment to actually, oftentimes we'll inject chemotherapy into the fluid around the brain to actually treat that area. And typically what your doctor will do is to actually check at that time just to make sure that there's no leukemia cells there. And so, you know, I think as long as they're doing, if they've done a good number of those treatments into the area around the brain and then checking for it, I think, you know, listening to your doctor and being reassured, I think is reasonable. But again, it's important to have that treatment and to check.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. For Dr. Luskin, what do you recommend for treating bleeding gums and overall oral care? I've recently had a hard time brushing my teeth because it can be painful.
Yeah, that's thank the caller or the listener for the question. You know, I think this goes to quality of life and the difference that supportive care can make as one is getting through treatment. You know, I think, you know, something for the listener to speak to their team about is whether or not any particular mouth rinses or oral care can be helpful and what exactly is causing the symptoms in terms of you know, whether or not certain rinses can target sores or bleeding. Generally, a soft toothbrush can be helpful just to make sure that there's not any particular sort of trauma to the area. But I think just making sure that the, you know, the treating team is aware that this is bothersome. I think sometimes when our patients are in the clinic, they don't want to bother us with maybe the, quote, more minor symptoms. And we do want to hear about those. And particularly given how frequent visits are often with ALL patients, making sure that you address these issues, and maybe not all of them at the same visit, but, you know, bring up what's bothering you, what's not making you feel well, because often the nurses and doctors can have little tricks to help you get through the treatment.
Excellent. Thank you. And for Dr. Curran, is biomarker testing relevant for ALL patients? I have a family history of lymphoma and leukemia, so I would like to know if I should look into genetic testing and or biomarker testing if diagnosed.
So as I think that's a great question. As I mentioned before, right now, for the most part, most of the leukemias that are diagnosed, we do not think are hereditary, so they're not passed down in families. But there are sometimes, in some cases, they can be. And so I think it would be worthwhile to bring this up with your physician and talk about the family history and see if being referred to a genetic risk clinic where they can assess the history and do some additional testing would be beneficial. So I think it would be something that would be worthwhile to discuss with your physician to see if a referral to a genetic risk clinic would be worthwhile.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. And for Dr. Luskin, please distinguish between T-cell and B-cell ALL. Can CAR-T is only available for B-cell?
For CAR-T cell is approved. There is an FDA-approved product for B-cell ALL. So that's great news. There's actually two approved products for ALL in general. One is only approved for children and young adults, and we have another approval for a product that's approved for all adults. There are also clinical trials going on for new B-cell products to try to improve the efficacy and toxicity, so we're hoping to see even better outcomes. For T-cell ALL, CAR T-cell is really only investigational, and to receive that, you'd have to be enrolled in a clinical trial.
Excellent. Thank you. I have a comment, and actually, if both speakers want to comment on this, telehealth is wonderful. My center even sends a lab technician to my house. Is that standard, or Dr. Curran or Dr. Dr. Luskin, do you want to comment on this?
I can maybe start. So I think that we are hopefully moving more and more towards that because we know it is much more convenient for patients. We have not, I think sometimes it can be challenging to get that set up. And so I would say for most of our patients, my patients, we're not able to do that, but I'm hopeful that in the future that will be more and more common because it does seem to be that a lot of patients do appreciate that and not having to get out and travel. Now, I do want to give one caveat to the telehealth is that, you know, there are some times where as much as we want there to be convenience for patients, it's really important sometimes for us to actually be able to see you in person, especially if you aren't feeling well. So that is the one caveat that if you're not feeling well, really coming in and being seen in person is important. And I think actually another area where I'm particularly excited is that I think some of the clinical trials are now moving to this also, where instead of having to come in to get some of the testing for the trials and some of the lab tests, that we're actually able to send people associated with the trials out to your house. And I'm hoping that that will help make these clinical trials more accessible as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And last question for Dr. Luskin. My doctor explained to me that my leukemia is refractory and I require more intensive treatment. What resources are available to me to examine my treatment options now that I know my disease is refractory? Should I look into a second opinion?
Well, you know, I think just to comment on the last two sort of comments, I think telehealth is a really great way for us to improve access and improve care for patients. And I think, you know, where the field is moving is making that more available, but also figuring out what the right situations are to use it. And I want to echo what Dr. Curran mentioned about if, you know, you're clinically not feeling well, there is definitely times where it's really important to be seen in person, to be examined, to get vital signs, and to, you know, be able to be seen in person by a provider. And similarly, I think sometimes when there's a, you know, difficult or extensive conversation, there are sometimes situations where communication, particularly with groups of patients, or groups of family members, where being in person can really have a lot of advantages. So I think it's really about balance. You know, in terms of learning more, I think a second opinion in a difficult situation is always a good idea. I think talk to your doctor about it. I always tell my patients a second opinion is win-win. I have patients of mine who frequently go for second opinion other places, and I have patients come to me for a second opinion. For me, I always say you'll learn that you're getting good care, or the what's being offered at your home center is the right approach, or you'll learn about a way to open up another opportunity or improve care. You know, as a clinician, I welcome the input from my colleagues, and you know, sometimes I discuss the recommendations with my patient, and we talk about, you know, is this something you want to implement, or if I maybe feel differently, I explain why, and it provides the right groundwork for a conversation.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I just want to ask each of our speakers to provide a takeaway. So we'll start with Dr. Luskin, then Dr. Curran, Mr. Rattlett, and then we'll wrap it up. So about a minute and a half or so, just for a takeaway, what you'd like people to take away from today's program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think what I would like to take away is that the time for hope for adults with ALL. We have a lot of new treatments that have already entered the standard approaches, and so even standard of care treatment is better now than it was even just a few years ago. And then similarly, Dr. Curran highlighted, there's that the field continues to change. We're learning how to use our available tools better, and then also try to develop new tools and new medications to treat patients. So it's a time of hope for patients, adults with ALL, and we really encourage patients to discuss their questions with their provider and educate themselves about their options.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thanks, Dr. Luskin and Dr. Curran.
So I think I would echo what Dr. Luskin just said. I think my big takeaway is that we have really made, you know, quite a bit of improvement in our treatment of adult ALL just over the past decade or even past several years. And I think that there's a lot of exciting new things coming up through both, again, the standard of care, but also through some of these newer clinical trials. So I would encourage everyone to talk to your physician about what new treatments may be available, what's new and coming, you know, what's new and what could maybe help not only in, you know, improve your care, but also contribute to these advances that we're making in the field.
Excellent. And Mr. Rowlett?
Well, again, thank you very much for having us on. And I would just encourage all the participants to visit our website, leukemiarf.org, where there is all kinds of information and resources available, including the important Clinical Trials Hub, which, as far as we know, is the only one of its kind that is specific to leukemia. And obviously, the doctors touched on the importance of learning about clinical trials, but there's all kinds of webinars and other information available as well. And that's leukemiarf.org.
Well, thank you so much. And definitely, if you are not familiar, haven't visited, or spent time on the Leukemia Research Foundation website or contacted them, please do. It's a wonderful resource for all of you. I want to thank our speakers. They've really been phenomenal. I also want to thank our participants because you really asked such great questions, which during that time allows us to actually further elaborate on some of the questions that you may have. Now, I have to acknowledge that we were not able to answer everyone's question, so I have some comments to make. For those of you who asked a question, I just want to say that for those who have asked a question, for those who have a question that is in queue and didn't get to ask it, or for those of you who have a question you'd like to ask, please go back to your treating healthcare team. You've learned something today, hopefully a lot today, and what you've learned you can take back to your healthcare team and include that in what you've learned and in informing your question. I do certainly recommend that you really work closely with your healthcare team. Remember, your healthcare team consists of many people. Of course, your oncologist, your hematology oncologist, But the team also includes oncology nurse, oncology social worker, patient navigator, financial navigator, resource navigator. There's a lot of people on that healthcare team to help. So start with your healthcare team and then branch out. You have the resources of the Leukemia Research Foundation and Cancer Care to contact. And most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I would not want anyone to feel alone in coping with ALL as an adult or in coping with any cancer. I want you to now know that you're part of a community of support and we're all here to help you. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today and wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.